Hi everyone, so we are going to the second episode of Learn Medicine with Dr. Debs, and today I'm going to teach you about pericardium. So pericardium means around, cardium means heart, so around, it's a membranous sac that covers the heart. It is placed in the middle mediastinum. It has two parts, the fibrous pericardium and the serous pericardium. Maybe the fibrous one is put there just to keep the heart in its place so that the heart is not displaced while it's busy pumping. So maybe because of that. And also it adds, it limits the distension, it acts as a barrier and all that. Serous pericardium again has two parts, the parietal pericardium and the visceral pericardium. The visceral pericardium covers the heart, it's on top of the heart, whereas the parietal pericardium lines the inner surface of the fibrous pericardium. Now, fibrous pericardium, it's a conical sac, it has an apex. Apex is situated at the level of the sternal angle. It is continuous with the adventitious, it's made up of dense fibrous tissue, fibrous pericardium. And it is continuous with the adventitia of the great vessels, also with the pretracheal fascia. The base is fused with the central tendon of diaphragm, and anteriorly it is attached to the body of sternum superiorly and inferiorly by the sternopericardial ligaments. Posteriorly it is related to the principal bronchi, the esophagus with the nerve plexus and the descending aorta. And on either side we all know the mediastinal pleura, the mediastinal surface of the lung, the phrenic nerve and the pericardiophrenic vessels. Serous pericardium is made of mesothelium. The visceral serous pericardium is also called the epicardium. Now the epicardium, at the roots of the great vessels, it is arranged in the form of two tubes. That is, at the roots of the great vessels, the visceral serous pericardium reflects off the surface of the heart onto the parietal serous pericardium. Okay, so in even the case of pleura, we learned that the visceral pleura reflects on to become the parietal pleura at the hilum. It will become one continuous membrane at the hilum. Similarly, in case of pericardium, the visceral pericardium is reflecting on to join the parietal pericardium. Only thing here, it occurs at two sites. One, it occurs on the superior surface of the heart at the level of the great arteries, that is the aorta and the pulmonary artery. The second site is around the veins, okay, the vena cava and the pulmonary veins. So there are two sites of reflection where the serous pericardium, the visceral pericardium is joining the parietal pericardium. So between these two sites of reflection, there is a space, and that space is called, we call it the transverse sinus. The transverse sinus is between these two sites. It is, it is opening on either sides into the pericardial cavity. Remember, the pericardial cavity is a space between the parietal layer and the visceral layer of the serous pericardium. So everything is happening within this, okay? And so this sinus, it opens into the general pericardial cavity. And it is located superiorly. That is, its relations are beneath, you have the left atrium, okay? Beneath the transverse sinus, you have the left atrium. Anteriorly, you have ascending aorta and pulmonary trunk. Posteriorly, superior vena cava. Okay? And on each side, it opens into the general pericardial cavity. There is another sinus called the oblique sinus. How it is formed? It's like, initially, all these superior vena cava, the pulmonary veins, at the beginning of the formation of the heart, they were all together. As the heart grew bigger, these veins grew apart. So there is a space in between these veins, and that is the oblique sinus. It's a J-shaped space and it's called the oblique sinus. Again, it is situated posterior to the left atrium. So oblique sinus is bound anteriorly by the left atrium, Posteriorly, there is a parietal pericardium, and on either side, the reflections of the pericardium. So remember, both these sinuses, the transverse and the oblique sinus, they open into the pericardium. The arterial supply of pericardium is by internal thoracic artery, musculosphenic artery, descending thoracic aorta. All these will give branches and pericardiophrenic vessels. And the nerve supply is by phrenic nerve. Fibrous pericardium and parietal pericardium both are supplied by phrenic nerve. And the visceral pericardium has got autonomic nervous system supply, ANS. Pain sensation is only from fibrous and parietal pericardium. The epicardium is not sensitive to pain. Now, the phrenic nerve has its root value C3, C4, C5. And its destination is diaphragm. So, on its way, it gives branches to fibrous pericardium. It passes through fibrous pericardium. And maybe because of that, if you have pericarditis and pain, that radiates to the shoulder and the lateral part of the neck. Next, we are going to individual conditions that affect the pericardium. One is pericarditis, then you have pericardial effusion and constrictive pericarditis. Pericarditis means inflammation of pericardium. It has several causes. Okay, the main ones being viral infection, viral pericarditis, then post-MI Drexler syndrome, and uremia. These are the most common causes. There are other causes too, like bacterial infection, fungal infection, rheumatoid arthritis, SLE, then any kinds of trauma, penetrating blunt trauma, then malignancies like CA breast or CA lung, CA esophagus and all. These are the causes. Now, the patient will present with chest pain, pleuritic positional chest pain, that is worse on lying down, better when you lean forward, retrosternal chest pain that radiates the shoulders. Then there might be low-grade fever also. You will be able to hear a pericardial friction rub. And if you take an ECG of this patient, you will find diffuse ST segment elevation in all leads. Excuse me. And a depressed PR. And that is very characteristic, depressed PR. If you look at the pathology of this pericarditis, you will find that there are several kinds of especially in case of viral pericarditis, you will find a fibrinous exudate, gross morphology, fibrinous exudate, which will give it a bread and butter appearance, shaggy appearance. Then if it is purulent pericarditis due to some bacterial infection, you can see frank pus. If it is malignancies, they say that you can see the excrescences around the pericardium, the projections of the secondaries. Then in case of constrictive pericarditis or in case of recurrent pericarditis, you will find adhesions also regarding the gross morphology. Then treatment is NSAIDs, colchicine, and in as a last resort, you can give steroids. It is better to avoid steroids because there is association of steroids with recurrence of pericarditis, and recurrent pericarditis will eventually lead to fibrosis. And they say that there are three ways that this pericarditis can lead on to. Either it will resolve without any problem, any fibrosis and all. Otherwise, it can lead to formation of effusion and it can become pericardial effusion. Or it will become, if it is severely necrotic and all, like especially in case of TB and all, there will be a lot of necrosis. Yeah, and in such cases, it can lead to formation of dense fibrous tissue. And that is a reason why it becomes constrictive pericarditis. Now, moving on to pericardial effusion pathology, it is again a product of pericarditis. It is from pericarditis. This effusion is formed. Usually in the pericardial sac, there is only around less than 50 ml of serous fluid. Now, depending on what kind of infection, what kind of pathology or insult, It could be a serous pleural and pericardial effusion, serous effusion. It could be serosanguinous with blood in it, and then it's called hemopericardium. Or it could be chylous, and that is due to the lymphatic obstruction. And the serous one is due to, it is almost similar to pleural effusion, like increased hydrostatic pressure, like in CHF, congestive heart failure, or conditions where there is decreased albumin, like in cirrhosis and all. This can cause serous effusion, pericardial effusion, where there is straw colored fluid but in excess. Serosanguinous or hemopericardium is usually as a result of blunt trauma, or it could be a malignancy, or it could be aortic dissection, anything. And chylous is lymphatic obstruction. Okay, then purulent pericarditis is usually due to severe infection. It could be due to infection of the surrounding structure, like pneumonia or another foci of infection anywhere. It can lead to pus formation. So anyways, the thing about effusion is, if it is slowly progressing, it won't cause much problem. But if it develops rapidly, all on a sudden, it can cause cardiac tamponade. It can compress the heart. The heart is not able to pump properly. So there will be reduced ejection fraction. It will give a picture of acute cardiac failure. Okay, because of rapidly accumulating fluid. And the patient will present with JVD, that is jugular venous distension, hypertension, and decreased heart sounds. You won't be able to hear the heart sounds, muffled. And these three, that is elevated JVP or jugular venous distension, hypertension, and decreased heart sounds, all these three together we call it Beck's triad. And also there will be pulsus paradoxus, that is a fall in BP of more than 10 millimeters mercury during inspiration. That is pulsus paradoxus. And diagnosis, again you can use an echo to diagnose it, and you have to do a pericardiocentesis to treat it. And you can also give, to maintain, to relieve the hypertension, you will have to give IV fluids as bolus to increase the BP. Next, we are moving on to constrictive pericarditis. Constrictive pericarditis is basically due to recurrent pericarditis. The heart is not able to expand properly. So the patient will present with symptoms that are similar to a diastolic CHF or a right-sided heart failure. There will be peripheral edema, hepatosplenomegaly, ascites and all. And you can hear a pericardial knock on examination, and diagnosis is by echo. Treatment is pericardiectomy. That is all about pericardium. I have covered the bare necessary points that you can write for your exams and all. And I hope you understood what I tried to convey. If you have any doubts or if you want to give a feedback, kindly mail me at deepaelsamatthews@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.